This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network. Robert Knight here. We begin today's program with a Pacifica editorial with Executive Director Arlene Engelhardt.
Guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. It's the foundation of our justice system, built to serve and protect the wrongly accused. But in the case of Troy Davis, it's a principle that has been defied, ignored, and trampled on. Troy has been on death row for the past 20 years for the murder of Savannah, Georgia police officer Mark McPhail. Despite serious doubts to his guilt, Davis' execution is scheduled for Wednesday, September 21st, which is also, ironically, the International Day of Peace. Troy has gathered worldwide support, and there is simply too much doubt to let this happen. We can save Troy, but it's something we can only accomplish together with your help. Here are four things that you can do to help save Troy Davis from execution. Write a letter to the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles asking them to grant Troy clemency, and fax your letter to 404-656-5651 or email webmaster at pap, that's P-A-P, dot state, dot G-A, dot U-S. Tell Chatham County District Attorney Larry Chisholm to petition for withdrawal of the death warrant for Troy Davis by calling 912-652-7308. That's 912-652-7308. You can participate in the NAACP's Too Much Doubt social media campaign by making Troy your profile pic on Twitter, Facebook, and tweeting from the hashtag Too Much Doubt. And you can text Troy to 62227, that's NAACP, for updates regarding the Troy Davis case. Troy's case is deeply personal to all of us. Troy could be our brother, our son. Troy could be any of us. I am Arlene Engelhardt, Executive Director of the Pacifica Foundation, and I urge you to take action today to prevent this act of injustice from going forward.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. Well, I know what's right. I got just one life. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I stand my ground, and I won't back down.
Hi, I'm David Cantor with the Law Offices of David Michael Cantor. Today's topic has to do with the execution drug, sodium thiopental, that was confiscated by the Drug Enforcement Agency from the states of Kentucky, Tennessee, and Georgia. Basically, in Arizona, recently there was an execution where this drug was brought in from England, and there were some challenges stating that it wasn't FDA approved, it wasn't tested, it shouldn't be brought in, and somehow they got the drug from somewhere else and conducted Arizona executions. Well, it turned out in Georgia, Kentucky, and Tennessee, this drug that they obtained, the Department of Corrections, they're claiming they were told, well, it was from inside the U.S. was provided. However, they've discovered emails telling the department heads that this had to clear customs. And it turns out that when it did clear customs, it was listed for use on animals. Now, the Drug Enforcement Agency is investigating these misrepresentations, and because of this, they've confiscated the drugs, and it's stopped all executions in those three states.
And that is Attorney David Cantor, and we'll be speaking with him later in the program about the possibility of the illicit shipment of drugs to state execution agencies, particularly on this perhaps eve of the execution of Troy Davis. And among those who have been considering such issues and the mechanics of state-sanctioned murder is the organization Reprieve, based in the United Kingdom. And we are fortunate today to have a live connection with Maya Foyle of Reprieve. You're speaking with us from London, are you not?
I am indeed. Thank you, Robert.
Why don't you just take all the time you need to explain the horrible things you've found out about the chemical and medical process?
Well, thank you, Robert. It's a sort of extraordinary moment because, in a certain respect, the lethal injection, the curtain to the execution chamber has been pulled open, and we are now really seeing, as you say, the mechanics behind it, but the brutal, grotesque mechanics behind not only the process of administering the lethal injection itself, and we can talk about how that is absolutely, you know, medically unsound in the most sort of grotesque, inhumane way you can imagine, and actually designed in a certain respect to cause intense suffering on many, many levels, which is invisible to the public. And there's that, and there's also the manner in which these Department of Corrections go about procuring the drugs, which itself is very cold, very callous. And what we're seeing now as supplies run dry, and you'll have heard that sodium thiopental, there were shortages of that drug, and various manufacturers who we've worked closely with pulled out of the market saying they didn't want to participate anymore. And the lengths that the state, the prison wardens, the executioners, even state officials who I can't name for obvious reasons, would go to, and the sort of language they use in their correspondence and badinage, things like from one prison to another, a guy asking for drugs saying it doesn't really matter if they've expired, said one. Another one managed to borrow drugs from another prison and wrote back, you know, you'd a man, you're a lifesaver, he wrote. And I quote, you know, I'm certain it is without irony that he wrote that. And, you know, this I'm reading day in, day out. It's really shocking stuff. And but while it is awful, awful that we should be seeing this and we should be hearing this, it actually needs to be in the public domain. And we need to expose the fact that the lethal injection is not a humane way of killing people. I mean, there's going to be no humane way of, you know, state-sanctioned murder, as you call it. It's sort of philosophically unsound as a principle. But this particular method is so cruel and potentially so torturous, and people are not allowed to see that. So we, you know, this is a good moment to expose all that.
The fear is worse than the moment, and the traditional way in which this is done, aside from the torturous irretrievability of the judicial appeals process, is the actual fact. And Maya Foa of Reprieve.org. I'd like for you to walk us through the horrible procedure where in many American death camps, there is a three-part violation with injections. Mm. I'd like you to talk about each of those three chemicals, starting with the pentothal and variations of one of three drugs that end up with a chloride that is supposed to stop the heart. But I'm aware of horrible misapplications and long-term tortures where they miss the vein and burn the arms of the victim. But please take us through a catechism of the torture process of American execution.
Certainly. Well, the traditional method, and this is used still in all but one state as the accepted protocol for lethal injections. It's a three-drug protocol called a cocktail, rather insidiously. The first drug is intended to anesthetize the prisoner slash patient. So ideally, you have a patient who would be in a hospital and would be administered this sodium thiopental, or now they're using pentobarbital, and we'll get back to that, which should render the patient prisoner unconscious. bear in mind that these would be trained medical personnel. There would be expert anesthesiologists administering this drug under normal circumstances. Here we have prison wardens who are not necessarily known to be the most skillful practitioners of medicinal science. But leaving that aside, you then take the second drug. The second drug is pancuronium bromide. Now, what few people realize is this is a purely cosmetic step in the process. And the reason for the pancuronium bromide being administered is to save the audience, the public, those who get to watch it, the journalists even, any embarrassment, shock, disgust from what actually happens when you give, when you kill a human being using these drugs, which is the human being's body will react to it. They may writhe. They may, if the drug has not been properly administered, for example, it hasn't gone into the vein, or the warden has not even fixed up the various implements properly, the syringe and things, so that you end up seeing the drugs in a puddle on the ground beneath the gurney rather than actually entering anywhere near the vein. So if that doesn't happen, you will see a prisoner writhing in absolute agony. And of course, Departments of Corrections cannot risk people seeing that. It would be too shocking. And they would see what's really going on. And I think a lot of people would be so repulsed, they would ask for, you know, the death penalty to be revoked altogether. The third drug is the killer drug. The third drug is the potassium chloride. And what you need to know about that is that in hospitals, when you administer that particular drug, you administer it in large, tiny doses, but you dilute it in large volumes of sort of saline solution and various other things, and you administer it usually through a drip over a number of hours. Even so, patients will still complain, I'm told by these doctors, they'll still complain that it stings when it goes through.
Like
it's
lava.
Like acid. It's like firing, you know, putting inflamed acid through the veins of a human being. I mean, it's absolute torture. And what I find more frightening even than that pain is that what you've done is you've rendered somebody paralyzed, so they cannot say, I'm fully conscious, I'm hearing and I'm breathing and I'm seeing what you're doing to me and I'm in agony and I can't tell you because I'm, you know, I can't move in motion. So what you get, and I've looked at some really horrific autopsy pictures from Georgia executions, in fact, where you see not only that the prisoner has what look like enormous stab and burn wounds all over his arms because they haven't managed to find a vein, or they've gone now for the thigh, or they've gone for the leg, or they've had to call in a doctor and do, you know, cut down procedure. But also, you see photographs of these people whose eyes are bolt open. Now, it's sort of simple. You don't need to be a scientist to know that you know, an anesthetic is meant to put you to sleep, and when you go to sleep, your eyes close. So if they've got their eyes open, they are terrorized, panic-stricken, and being, you know, and suffering, consciously being tortured to death. This is a really, really brutal act, and I can't believe that the people behind that curtain aren't aware that this happens. It's a big, you know, it's almost a conspiracy to cause pain in a way.
Maya Foa of reprieve.org. I'd like to read into the record this issue in terms of how Georgia and other execution chambers may be violating the law and defying the loudly proclaimed U.S. war on drugs. This is from The Guardian, April 2011. Britain bans export to United States of execution drugs. The story by David Batty reads as follows, just the first couple of paragraphs, and I want you to respond to this. Britain is to ban the export to the United States of three pharmaceutical drugs that are used to execute prisoners on death row, according to the Department of Business, Innovation and Skills Secretary of the United Kingdom, Vince Cable. An export ban for phenobarbital, pancuronium bromide, and potassium chloride, as you just mentioned, used in lethal injections, will be formalized in a few days, said the business secretary, who is urging a Europe-wide ban on sales of these killer drugs to the United States. Quoting, British drugs should not be used to carry out lethal injections because of the importance and urgency of the situation. This is an issue on which we felt we had to take the lead, end quote. The move comes after a parliamentary inquiry heard that enough pharmaceutical drugs have been sold to the U.S. by licensed British wholesalers since last summer to execute 100 death row inmates. The Department for Business Innovation and Skills last November imposed export controls on sodium thiopental, a rarely used anesthetic, after it emerged that a small-scale wholesaler working out of the back office of a West London driving school had sold the drug to Georgia and Arizona's Departments of Corrections. Final paragraph. The anti-capital punishment charity Reprieve, which is you, Maya Thor, which mounted a legal challenge to ban sodium thiopental, welcomed the new block on these three drugs. But the charity said that U.S. states imposing the death penalty via lethal injection are now turning to a Danish company, Lundbeck A.S., for supplies of phenobarbital. Denmark's foreign minister said that she will urge U.S. states such as Texas and Ohio also to stop using that drug. Please bring us up to date on your noble work on this very issue.
Well, this is, I mean, I'm very glad you read that particular extract. There has been a concerted effort in Britain, yes. In Europe, we're moving towards export controls. But what happened with Lundbeck was a first, and it was an important first, because there, for the first time, a manufacturing company was forced to take ownership, take responsibility for their product. No longer could they say, this is a big myth that pharmaceutical companies live by. They say, there's nothing we can do. We make these drugs to help people, to improve the quality of life, to improve health. You know, but when we sell them on, they get sold on to wholesaler X, Y, Z, to distributor A, B, C, and then they end up in the hands of the prisons, these nasty prisons who use our drugs for killing. Now, that's fine. What I worked on with Lundbeck was, well, there were a couple of stages to it, but looking at the pharmaceutical industry as a whole, what everybody needs to know is that that's a myth. That is not true. If you have drugs which are high dollar products, they're very expensive ones. If you have high risk products or you have high tech products, a pharmaceutical company will be so careful to restrict the distribution of those sort of particular drugs to specified legitimate users for commercial reasons, because the FDA has told them to. But the point is, you can restrict distribution. So what Lundbeck have done is significant. They have had to overhaul their distribution system. No longer can they just sell their drugs to your normal distributors who would sell them on to prisons and to hospitals and to, you know, departments of corrections, execution chambers, willy-nilly. It doesn't really matter to them. Now, there is a very careful, closely monitored system whereby only a certain number of hospitals who have been registered with Lundbeck are entitled to buy the product. That is it. Just those people. So the moment you want to buy, you go out. Any one of your listeners could go out and try and buy some Nembutal. Nembutal is the trade name for pentobarbital, which, as you read, many, many states switch to. They will not be able to buy it because they will not be listed as an approved buyer. You need to go through a process now. You need to sign a contract with the company saying, this will not be used for executions. I will not sell this on to somebody else because then it could be used for executions. It is a very rigorous system, but it is not new. It is something that the pharmaceutical industry has the power to implement. Now, what I'm saying is, of course, it is awful. It is unfathomable that really the U.S. state and agencies will allow drugs in to the country, which they would not allow the same drugs in if they were being imported for the purposes of sort of cancer treatment for your average Joe. But if it's for the purposes of executions, and I can refer back again to correspondence I've read where you have state wardens writing to other sort of national agencies in the U.S. saying, you know, let him know this is urgent. This is for executions. So you have to expedite a shipment because it is intended to kill people. Now, the fact they would do that is one thing. I probably am not going to get very far fighting those agencies, those organs. There should be legal battles. There will be. And the U.S. defense lawyers, they've got that covered, and they do a great job. Yeah. What we can do is say, well, we can prevent exports from Europe because Europe is against the death penalty. We do not approve of that. But also, we can hold companies to account. if they claim to be ethical, which most of them do, you will find most pharmaceutical companies do not wish to be associated with executions, and rightly so. We have evidence of the Second World War. We don't really need to go very much further than A.G. Farben, you know, in our examples. And the shadow of Big Pharma looms. So really, they want to do anything they can not to be associated, apart from put money behind, you know, the process by which you prevent your drugs from being abused. Now we've shown that they can do it. There is no excuse not to. So I really foresee a sort of tidal wave, a shift in the execution drug market, which I, for one, you know, this is not the end of the campaign. It's very good that Lundbeck has done this, and I'm very pleased and that the company did stand up and do something unprecedented.
Maya Foa, I think on behalf of all of our listeners, I can express only the utmost respect and thanks for your mercy of investigation by going upstream of what may be the illicit drug dealers of the state killers in the United States. Take a moment to tell us about your wonderful work.
Well, Reprieve is a fantastic organization, which I've been lucky enough to be part of for just over a year, really working on the what we call the Stop the Lethal Injection Project. It's SLIP, if you look us up. We've got a narrative history of the campaign so far. Reprieve was founded by Clive Stafford Smith, who is actually, among many other things, he's also a U.S.-trained lawyer, so he did a lot of capital defense work, hence his interest in death penalty work, but it's spread over to all sorts of state injustices. So we did work on Guantanamo, representing prisoners there, prisoners in secret prisons all over the world, really.
Well, Maya Foa of Reprieve.org, we thank you for your great work.
Oh, pleasure, and thank you for calling, and lovely to speak with you.
This is 5 O'Clock Shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating from WBAI. And one of the foremost legal investigators in this area is David Cantor, Esquire. His work can be followed at dmcantor.com. David Cantor, I was much taken by your research into the possible illicit supply of death drugs to state execution chambers. Tell us what you've been looking into.
Well, first of all, death penalty, obviously, I'm against the death penalty. And I think it's important to follow these cases. It's interesting to note about 3:51 New York time, about 30 minutes ago, the U.S. Supreme Court stayed a Texas execution on Cleve Foster. Third time this year they stayed his execution. And it deals with ineffective assistance of counsel at the appellate level. When talking about Troy Davis, they should stop his execution. Obviously, high profile is coming up because there's questions on his case also. But I wanted to point that out, that the Supreme Court literally 35 minutes ago stopped another execution out of Texas. In regards to this debate referencing phenobarbital, as you know, in Arizona, they used to use a three-drug protocol, and they've now gone to the one-drug protocol, and that was Charles Ryan of the Arizona Department of Corrections. He changed that in March of this year. Now, when the drugs were coming in to the U.S., they obviously found that they were getting it through customs and claiming it was for animal use, when in reality it was going to be used on humans for execution.
Who was the addressee of these illicitly conspired drugs?
Well, it came into the Department of Corrections on August 20th of this year. The Arizona Republic reported that there were some emails detailing the FDA's effort to avoid responsibility. And what happened was these emails accidentally were sent over to the Federal Public Defender and on a FOIA request to the paper, and they were sent over and they were not redacted. So in these unredacted emails, according to the Arizona Republic, they stated that they were in essence trying to get these drugs into the country without it being specifically detected.
What might we know about Georgia's history in this?
Well, first of all, with Georgia, when they found out that they were bringing in the new drug, phenobarbital, the DEA confiscated their drugs, and also Kentucky and Tennessee, and that was in March 16th of this year, I believe. But I think it's more important to point out that the Humane Society of the United States states that in order to euthanize an animal, the technique must resolve in painless unconsciousness followed by respiratory and then cardiac arrest, and then ultimately death. And the reason that's important about painless unconsciousness, on June 20th of this year in Georgia, according to the Associated Press, they executed an inmate with the last name of Blankenship. And in the videotaped execution, the AP reporter stated, and I quote, "As the injection began, Blankenship jerked his head towards his left arm, made a startled face while blinking rapidly. He soon lurched to his right arm, lunging with his mouth agape twice. He then held his head up and his chin smacked as he mouthed words that were inaudible to observers," end quote. Now, this does not sound like painless unconsciousness with this drug, pentobarbital. So obviously there's questions here. I mean, this is just not only inhumane, it's inhuman, period.
For those who are of a chemical bent, what is this transition from sodium pentothal to pentobarbital?
Well, basically what happened was sodium thiopentanol was what they utilized in a three-drug cocktail. They used the sodium thiopentanol. They also used pancuronium bromide, lastly potassium chloride, and they used a three-drug cocktail. Well, once they were put on hold with sodium thiopentanol, they said, well, let's just use pentobarbital, because basically it's what they use to euthanize animals. Then, of course, the Danish company, their drug, Nembutal, they started blocking it. They didn't want it to come into the U.S. There was a U.S. company that also, I believe, was going to start manufacturing in Italy, so they start manufacturing in the U.S. So now there's this issue of how they're getting it into the U.S. I think the more important issue isn't just the fact that they're getting it into the U.S., what I think is by nefarious methods, but the fact that this is not painless unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. It's a myth. It is just not painless unconsciousness.
What are the technical legal violations that you suspect might be at work here?
Well, cruel and unusual punishment. That's clearly what's at play. But I think, and again, I'm going off the excellent work by Michael Kiefer of The Republic, if they can look into these emails and find out, if laws were broken, that's important, because it was the FDA, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, U.S. Customs, Border Patrol, all consulted with the White House, addressing questions about the legality of importing this drug into the U.S. for prison executions. That's what these emails revealed. So this goes all the way to the top chain, and it appears that there may be some serious issues here.
Who administers this? Are these physicians or simply mechanics? And if they are physicians, are there ethical issues and violations involved there?
Well, I'll be honest. That's a very good question. Now, I'm not sure. In certain states, they use physicians to administer this, and others they use physicians' assistants. But either way, I'd say there's absolutely ethics. I'm not sure how you can take the Hippocratic Oath and then participate in executing somebody. I understand euthanasia. I understand that completely. But I don't get how you can take a perfectly healthy human being who's being strapped to a table and executed and still call yourself a doctor who follows a Hippocratic Oath. And that's very much of a stretch for me to take that position.
David Cantor, please be sure to include how people can get closer to following your good work, sir.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, besides death penalty work, obviously we do all sorts of representation and criminal defense. And a lot of times, our positions aren't popular, but doing the right thing isn't always popular. Our purpose is to defend people's constitutional rights. And that includes the right to privacy, the right against illegal search and seizure, the right to have adequate counsel. And, a lot of people always focus on factual guilt or innocence. What we focus on is whether people's rights were protected, whether the proper procedures were followed. And obviously, if those things are followed, then we understand some people are going to be incarcerated, but we've always been against the death penalty. Under all circumstances, we're against the death penalty.
Our guest has been David Cantor, Esquire. He is the chief attorney at DMCANTOR, dmcantor.com. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And that concludes today's edition of 5 o'clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York.